shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Daytime turns me off and I don't mean maybe.
Welcome to Nocturnal Journal tonight. Got to pack in a lot in an hour here. We're going to, second half hour, we're going to talk about Supper Club Cheese. And our first half hour, thanks for coming down to the studio, is Andrea Thome.
Yes, right.
Thanks for coming down. And you are a former news and sports anchor.
A long time
in Ohio.
Ago. Yes, yes.
And you're married to a Baseball Hall of Famer we've heard of.
I am, Jim. Yes, Jim Thome.
But you came to my attention, you're a writer. And someone actually sent this to me, and I want to get to some of the books you've written, too, but the blog, this is why I wanted to talk to you, the blog I never wanted to write. It's about September 20th, 2018 is when you posted
this.
Yes,
right.
It's about the Stereogenics thing.
It is.
So
it is.
Talk about that and what prompted you to write this.
Sure. So this company in the western suburbs where we live is called Stereogenics, and they are a company that sterilizes medical equipment, food-grade equipment, and they use a class one carcinogen called ethylene oxide. And so that's been burning. They've been doing this since the mid-80s in our community, but it just really came to everyone's attention when a report was released in August. And so a lot of sleepless nights for a lot of us that have found out that this has been going on really sort of unmeasured until 2014 when some upgrades were done. But there have been leaks. There's been all kinds of problems with this place. So I was just really, this blog was born out of a sleepless night. I woke up and thought, you know, I had had sort of an aha moment about my mom's health. My mom was a very healthy vegetarian person when she moved here in 2007 to help us with our grandkids, she and my dad. And she died of liver disease in 2014, in October. Never smoked, never drank. Always opened the windows in her home, though. She lived a mile away from Stereogenics. So then my dad, who is also extremely healthy, walks 6, 7, 8 miles a day, upped his walk to grieve his wife of 48 years. And as a result, was just diagnosed 2 days before Christmas with a brain tumor. And they don't really know the cause of it. They say they suspect environmental is a big part of it, though. And
wow.
You know, neither one of these were pre-existing conditions in our family. And so I wrote this blog, I published it, and the next day, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails from people in my neighborhood, my neighbors, my friends, I had no idea. On one block, 8 out of 10 families had cancers, none of them pre-existing conditions. This is we've stopped believing in coincidence.
You say here, I highlighted some things. Our cancer rates are 10 times higher than the national average, but only in a 10-mile radius surrounding this plant.
And that's just when the wind's not blowing. You know, wind doesn't discriminate.
They burn and emit 24 hours a day, seven days. They're still doing
that. They're doing it today. There is some hope. Senator John Curran introduced some legislation just a couple of days ago that if it passes, will close them down because of several different things. But there will also be a complete ban on ethylene oxide in our state by 2022. That's a big deal because this stuff really shouldn't be. There are other ways to sterilize medical equipment. There are other means. And so if there are other means available, they should be being used.
Your kids, it says that you're reluctant to send your son to play almost daily fall baseball and flag football games, depending on which way the wind blows.
His ball field is less than a mile away. We have dear friends who live a quarter of a mile, many friends. I'm sure in the mid-80s, this wasn't as populated of an area
when
they were put there. The environmental standards, you know, but when you know better, you do better. And I'm surprised that this company hasn't just picked up stakes and said, you know what, we do need to be somewhere less populated. But the woman who is the face of Stereogenics, her name is Kathleen Hoffman. She is a lead lobbyist in the country for ethylene oxide. So she wants to see more of it being used, not less of it being used. So really, I think she's dug in her heels, knowing that this is a precedent-setting case. If they do leave, this doesn't bode well for her interests, personal interests, otherwise.
So where is it going to go? Tell me what's going to be happening, especially before election day.
Sure. So what we need is this legislation that was introduced. We need Speaker Madigan to allow it to be heard during veto session, which is November 17th. We need it heard, we need it passed, and we need it signed during veto session. So it's very important that people who care about this, who are interested and who care about their environment, call their leaders, call their elected officials, and let them know that this is something that they want done. And also, there is a hearing coming up on October 26th.
Yeah, I got that today.
Yeah, that Jim Durkin is has sponsored. And we need people to go on and you know, you can go to Stop Sterigenics Facebook page. You can go to stopsterigenics.com and find out a lot more about this. But witness slips need to be filled out. Even if you can't be there, it takes 2 seconds to fill out a witness slip to say that you are opposed to this. To Sterigenics. So you want to be as an opponent when you're filling out that witness slip. But if you go to the Stop Sterigenics Facebook page, you'll find out everything you need to know. And it would, obviously, the people in our neighborhoods would be very grateful. But this company is operating all over. And if you look, there are places all over the country, all over the world. They're in Germany. This is a big billion-dollar corporation. So they need to rethink the way they're doing business.
What is our governor's role in this?
Well, at one point, he says he no longer has a financial stake, but we have documents that in 2018, he did take financial interests in this company. It's in his tax returns, so it's in black and white. So he's been pretty quiet on the matter. I mean, he has said he thinks they need to be on pause, but saying it and doing it are two different things. Nothing's been done on his part.
So how do you think it's going to play out?
I'm hopeful that during the veto session, Speaker Madigan's going to say, okay, let's hear this. Let's get it passed. That's passed all the elections, so we're not going to have any election shenanigans going on. We're going to see who the real helpers are, I think, in November.
So, I mean, I've never met you before. I read the blog, but you've really stepped up to the plate with this. You've really got your act together on.
I
got to
tell you, it was accidental activism. I wasn't intending. I just wanted to share my story because I thought, I didn't even realize there would be that many other people, but boy, was I surprised, and it resonated, and the hair on the back of my neck is standing up right now thinking about it. And I'm so proud of our community because people have not let go. We have 8,000 members on our Facebook page. We have 28,000 signatures. You know, we've had some elective officials that have really stepped up and organized for us, and I'm just really proud of our community. If you want to learn more, you can look on the Facebook
page. Give me the Facebook page again.
Stop Sterigenics.
What are the skills in your career and in your life that you brought to organizing things like this? I mean, you had a background of, obviously, the media skills have to help. Mm-hmm. Raising a family with a baseball player as your husband. What are some of the skills that you applied to activism here?
Well, I think I maybe I was a little more comfortable in telling my story. And that's the other thing. I thought, let me tell this story. There are a lot of people who it's too soon. I mean, it's been 4 years since I lost my mom. Every day is too soon. Uh-huh. But I felt like maybe I could give a voice to people that it was too painful to talk, or who couldn't talk in public about it, or who didn't feel comfortable sharing. So I guess I bring that. My mom was an activist. She was a peace activist.
She was
an environmental activist. She marched Grandmothers for Peace. She
Did
worked
she really?
On Native American reservations. She was a cool lady.
What was her name?
Sharon Passione.
Really?
Yeah. She was a poet. She was a writer, self-published poet 20 years ago. So she was a cool lady ahead of her time.
Where'd she grow? Where did your parents grow up?
She was born coal miner's granddaughter in Morgantown, West Virginia. Very humble beginnings. Lived there, then lived in Detroit, where she met my dad. My dad was a son of a cop, but single mom, and went into the Navy when he was 18 years old, and then helped raise his siblings once his mom died in her 40s. So they both really had to work every minute of their lives to get everything they had.
You said you got your writing gene from your mom. She passed in 2014, right?
Yeah, 2014, yeah.
And did that kind of reinvent your writing career? Talk about how that inspired you to write.
Well, I always thought I would write something. I thought it might be a children's book. These books that I wrote are not children's books.
No, they're not.
They're what you want to read if you want to be inspired to maybe make children. Let's put it that way. They're love stories.
Yeah.
So women's fiction. I just think the first one, Walland, in the series, it's a 3-book series, and I started writing Walland about a year after my mom died. You know, I took a year to really suck my thumb and feel sorry for myself, and then I thought, she wouldn't want me to do that. I could feel the sands of time slipping away, and I thought, I better get started. So I just opened the laptop, and it poured out of me, and I think it was cathartic. I needed to put something happy into the world. And so that's how it happened. I had no outline. I mean, I was like the Forrest Gump of writing. I just kept writing. And then when I got to the end of the pier, I turned around and wrote some more. You know, it just sort of happened.
I just gave me the books, but you said a book can be steamy and sexy while keeping it classy.
I like
so talk about the three books together and the theme.
Sure. So Walland is the first book, and it's set in a place called Blackberry Farm in Tennessee. It's a place we've been many times, my husband and I. So it was really kind of a love letter to Blackberry Farm. It started out, and then the characters. I enjoyed writing this book so much that I finished it, and I was writing something completely different, and I'd let my girlfriends have a preview. And they said, well, wait a minute, you're writing a second book, right? Like, there's more about these people. And I said, well, I hadn't really thought about this being a series, but let me, I was having a harder time with the new book I was writing. So I set it aside, and I wanted to see what would come. Well, it was like turning the faucet back on. Those characters just came right back to me. So Seeds of Intention was the second book, and then House of Belonging is my most recent book that came out in June.
We got to take a break here, but... Does Jim proofread them? Does he read
He's
these?
Read all three of them.
Has he really?
Yeah, yeah. They're fire starters. Let's put it that way. If I can share that.
All right, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back and talk a little about Cleveland and your baseball history.
Cool.
So thanks for joining us. Don't go away on Nocturnal Journal. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN, and we're in the studio with Andrea Tomei.
Sorry. Do you know how many times that happens?
Yeah, a lot. I should know that.
I almost do it myself.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us. So talk about your roots in Ohio.
Yeah.
And how you got into television in Ohio.
So I lived in Ohio, went to high school in Ohio, uh-huh. and also college, went to Bowling Green. And while I was in my senior year at Bowling Green, the news director from one of the affiliate stations up in Toledo came down to tour with our professor and saw me doing sports, which I was just kind of doing for fun. You know, my dad and my brother grew up making me watch every sport under the sun, so I knew a lot about it. And he saw me and he said, we have an opening for a weekend sports anchor. You know, you can do the 6 and 11 on Saturday and Sunday. We'll pay you $100 a newscast. I thought, oh my God, I'm rich. So I said,
I'll
do it.
That's kind of what we get here, right?
Right. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do it. And I started doing sports and I loved it. And then my goal was to get back to Cleveland. And I did shortly after that, worked with Gibb Shanley, who was kind of a legendary sports guy there in town. And he was really kind of took me under his wing and was really sweet and taught me a lot. Did a lot of high school sports there. And then Jim and I met him interviewing him opening day of 95 down in Texas. And then came home a week later and he came up to me at the ballpark and he said, what are you doing here? Excuse me. And I said, well, I'm from here. And I said, oh, he said, oh, I thought you were from Texas when I met you. And so we just kind of hit it off. And a couple months later, started dating. And the rest is history.
We said before we went on the air, he's like the nicest guy in baseball.
He's
right?
Pretty darn nice. Yeah.
He is. He's just so sweet.
He is.
That's
he
that
is.
Peoria thing, right?
You know, it is. And his whole family is really sweet. They're just salt of the earth. What you see is what you get. He's got a huge heart.
And have you been to Jim's Steakhouse in Peoria?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, that's one of Jim's favorite spots.
Jim's you know, he does he's on MLB Network, right?
He is. He loves it. And you know, he was worried about that at first. He's like, I don't know if TV's my thing. But I said, gosh, you're talking about what you love. And when I watch him on there and they go in Studio 42 and play around, like, you know, he and Sean Casey are like two golden retrievers in there, you know, just having a blast. He's so good at it.
That's what I thought about this driving in tonight. Did you give him any tips? I mean, since this is what you did for a career, did he ask you for advice or did he just go off on his own?
Not about the broadcasting. The only thing I said is don't look at yourself in the monitor. It drives me crazy anchors do that. When you can tell they sort of start pursing their lips. And I said, just don't do that.
Yeah.
Because that's annoying. But other than that, do your thing.
Yeah. What was Hall of Fame weekend like for you?
It was overwhelming in every sense of the word. It was, it felt like for the first time ever in baseball, and we've been together 23 years in the baseball life, there was no competition. Everybody was sort of at the top of the heap. And it was like this giant family. Our kids were running around. You know, at one point we looked down and here comes our son out of Lake Otisauga. He's barefoot, no shirt on, and he's running through the back of the hotel. And every Hall of Famer you can imagine is just milling around. That's what it's sort of like. It's just like someone's family barbecue for 4 days.
And you were telling me it's kind of interesting that everybody's on the same level.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not the competitive thing there. They've all kind of, quote, made it.
Exactly. Or, yeah. It was really welcoming. And just, to see at breakfast, you could see everybody from, you know, Bob Costas was there getting his award to Pudge Rodriguez. My son could not wait to meet Ken Griffey Jr., who, after he met Landon, he said, Landon, I'm going to send you a bat in a couple weeks. And sure enough, in the mail, here it comes, a signed bat. And Landon just thinks it's the best thing ever.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
What? I brought you a magazine from 1983 that the catcher Ted Simmons, his wife, put together. I don't know if it still exists, called The Waiting Room, a publication for women in professional baseball. And it's like wives and partners and stuff kind of put this magazine together. It's writing and art. I showed it to you in the green room.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what the life of players' wives. That's a big question, but what's that like?
Well, I was leafing through that while I was sitting in the green room, and I can tell you I relate to almost everything she wrote in there. And even though that was in 83 and my time with Jim started in 95 and then through 2012, a lot of that is just a common thread of what it's like. It's 6 months out of the year you're never with your husband, and 6 months out of the year you can't shake the guy.
Yeah.
Because you're home together. So it's a big adjustment. You have to really be flexible. Luckily my husband married a Rolling Stone. I don't mind moving around. I relished in, February would roll around and we'd have to pack everything up and move to Florida for 2 months. And we always took our kids with us everywhere we went. We had them later. We waited 5 years. So that was really only a part of our journey for the last 10. People that have their kids younger and have to raise kids all the way up, I think it's a little more difficult. But I loved the life. I thought it was different and interesting, and I don't know. It was great. It was an adjustment a little bit when he retired in 2012, but I don't think he would ever go back now. Maybe. I shouldn't say never. He may manage if the opportunity came. But to go back to that life now after a 5-year break would be an interesting thought.
Yeah. But you have to be organized, though. Like you said, you're moving around. You have to be able to know how to pack. You guys did move around a lot.
We did. We were in Cleveland, and then we moved to Philadelphia like 9 days after we had our daughter. So that was tough.
Uh-huh.
And then came to Chicago and then Minnesota. And we've always stayed in Chicago once we were here, but we lived during the seasons in the other places, Minneapolis and so on.
Did you talk to other wives about some of the things you're interested in? Did you talk about writing? I want to talk in the little time we have left. You also are into photography.
Yeah, I love photography. So I took all three pictures of the covers of my books, and that was really important to me. But yeah, I have a very good friend, Carrie Sexton, Richie Sexton, who played for the Brewers a while back.
Uh-huh.
She and I have maintained our close friendship over the years. She's a photographer too. I think that's something that you can take a piece of places you've been with you everywhere you go. That's what's cool about it.
Okay, we got to. Can you hang around? You want to hang around?
Yeah.
Be a sidekick for the cheese people?
Club cheese, yeah, okay. I'll stay.
Okay, so give us all the websites, and especially about Sterigenics again. And,
sure. Yeah. So on Facebook, you can go to the Stop Sterigenics page. You can also go to stopsterigenics.com. And then I have a personal website. It's just andreatomey.com. And people can find out about my books. There's links to buy them. You can buy them everywhere on Amazon, at bookstores. I love when people buy from independent bookstores because we really need to keep those bricks and mortar stores alive. So
for
that's
sure.
a great option.
So I'm going to cozy up with one of these tonight.
Yay! Okay, start with Walland.
Okay.
That's the first one.
Okay. So don't go away. We'll be back more Nocturnal Journal after this on WGN.